Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
On today's podcast, I review the new Jude Law, Carrie Coon movie, The Nest. Rachel Melanta is back with her segment spin-off, and Rove returns to discuss episode 6 of WandaVision. I'm your host, Justin Hamilton, and you're listening to Big Squid. Crazy podcast today with movies, books and TV covered, and then what is certain to be a controversial return from Rachel as she not only rates her favourite versions of Doctor Who in the modern era, that is, but she also tells us which aliens the Doctor has probably had sex with. I'm guessing you will agree, disagree, be impressed and flabbergasted as to where this conversation goes. I'll talk about that a little bit more when we get up to that part of the podcast. We also have Rove returning for his thoughts on episode 6 of WandaVision. Damn, that series has been great, hasn't it? It's really taken me by surprise. I hope you're enjoying it as much as we have. This might be the most fun I've had with a Marvel production for a while, and, you know, I couldn't really work out why. Like, I really enjoyed Infinity War and Endgame. I think they're to be commended for just how crazy they are. Like, if you put that down on paper, you think, you're never going to make that work. And then they made it work. And that, I feel that way about a lot of the Marvel products. Not everything's a winner, but when it does work, you think, wow, how did that come together in the way that it did? I've enjoyed the Spider-Man movies. I think they're fun. Same with Thor Ragnarok. But I've gotten into this series so much more, and I think it's because it's the first time I felt like I'm reading a comic book event where each issue is released weekly. Like, if you read a comic properly, like, you can flip through it and do it in minutes, but if you kind of read it properly and look at the artwork and take everything in, it can take about 20 minutes, and these episodes are about 30 minutes, so feels like an old school event. Anyway, more thoughts on that later in the podcast as well. First, I want to tell you about a book that I haven't even finished yet, but I can't wait to share a few thoughts with you before doing a proper review once I'm done. So I've been reading Ryan Hughes' XX, a novel, Graphic. In case you think I had a stroke and forgot how to speak, that's the actual title, XX, a novel, Graphic. I hope you even noticed the pause for the comma between novel and graphic. Anyway, Hughes is an amazing artist with his skill set, including being an author, an illustrator, a graphic designer, a comic artist, a typographer, and he brings all of these skills into play for his book. Now, the reason I bought it was because I saw a quote from my favorite author, Grant Morrison, who said, "This is the best genre book of the last 25 years. Brilliant, exciting, absorbing, and mind-blowing. A perfect work of art about what it means to be human in a world of gigantic ideas. As you can imagine, that pressed a lot of my buttons. So I bought the book, and when it arrived, it was massive, like 900 plus pages. And I immediately looked at it, put it to one side, because I just didn't have the headspace to tackle such a weighty tome. I also didn't feel like working out when I read the book. Like, this thing is heavy. Like, it's so heavy it makes Richard Feidler's books look like holiday pamphlets. I'm kidding, of course. If you saw the live show, you know that I work out with his books. Anyway, the cover was so alluring that I couldn't help but flick through it. And since that moment, like, I literally flicked through the first few pages, just, you know, kind of read them, wasn't really even committing. I was standing up, you know, just, oh yeah. And since then, I've had to make the literal conscious decision to put it down, to get on with work, or I've had to decide, well, are you going to catch up with friends or are you going to keep reading this book? And sometimes the book has won out. It's great. If you're keen to read it, and I'll give this a proper review once I'm done, the premise is a mysterious signal of extraterrestrial origin is detected and an artificial intelligence expert is brought in to try and decode it. But when the expert and his team enters the place the signal encodes, they discover that place is already occupied. And you know what? I'll leave it at that. Part of the fun is not really knowing where this is going and being amazed as the story reveals itself. It is also incredibly beautiful visually as it incorporates different types of fonts for different characters and different settings. It incorporates NASA transcripts. NASA? Oh God, my Adelaide accent really kicked in then. NASA transcripts, newspaper and magazine articles, fictitious Wikipedia pages, indecipherable alphabets. It's even got a forgotten novelette from the 60s that foreshadows events in the book. And all of this in the service of a compelling story about what it means to be alive and what it means to be human. It even has on one page a little QR, and if you click on it with your phone, well, it opens up something which I will leave you to discover. I'm not telling you. Find out for yourself. It's cool. Anyway, I'm halfway through this book and I am loving it. I will give you a complete review once I am finished. And I have a feeling that review will come up pretty soon. Right, let's head to the movies and talk about Jude Law and Carrie Coon in The Nest.
Things are dried up here for me.
Oh! No! Yeah!
There's an opportunity.
Where?
London.
This would be our fourth move in 10 years.
Backwards.
But money's fine, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. This is a fresh start.
How about this?
You shouldn't be working for someone else. Be your own boss. Build your own place. Own your own horses.
Something doesn't feel right.
It's not your job to worry. You leave that to your husband.
It scares me that you actually think that.
So are you back here full time?
Oh, yes. We've just bought a beautiful farm in Surrey, and we're thinking of a pied-à-terre in Mayfair. It's just small talk.
I saw some deposits you made. It's nowhere near what you're spending.
Don't worry. I have a huge check coming in at the end of the month. Everything's going to be fine.
Is it?
You're delusional because you have nothing, Rory. We have nothing. It's horrible here. No one is the same
There's
here.
There's nothing.
Nothing
wrong
is the same
with
here.
This house.
People seem to want everything and expect every need to be fulfilled.
What is happening? You're all strangers to me right now, all of you.
You're embarrassing.
And you're exhausting.
This is what we always wanted.
I didn't quite know what to make of The Nest when I saw it last week. My main reason for checking this film out was because I love Carrie Coon, as anyone who joins me for the rewatch of The Leftovers will soon discover. You are going to hear me talk about her a lot. Nora. Anyway, I love her, and I really enjoy Jude Law in a lot of movies as well. So that was enough for me to check it out. And I went in, and I didn't watch the trailer. I didn't read any synopsis. And while I was sitting in the cinema, much to my surprise, as the movie progressed, it turned out it was a horror movie. Right up until it wasn't. But then it was. Is that confusing enough for you? Okay, let me explain. The opening of the movie is a familiar one for horror fans. A happy family buys a beautiful property, but once they move in, something isn't right. There's a mysterious force that appears to be attached to the home, and we begin to see the family unravel before our eyes. Set in the 80s, Jude Law plays Rory, a successful New York stockbroker who moves his family back to the UK to take advantage of the economic boom that has occurred under the Thatcher regime. Correct use of the word regime as well, in case you wonder where my politics lie. His wife, Alison, Carrie Coon, is a horse trainer by trade, and she's uncertain about this move, but Rory is so sure that this is the right decision, she follows him with children in tow. The eldest, Sam, played by Una Roche, lives in the twilight of her teen years, not yet an adult, too old to be a kid. Sam is Alison's daughter to a previous marriage. Their young boy, Ben, who's played by Charlie Shotwell, is a carefree kid who ticks all the boxes for your typical happy lad. They move from their happy life in America to return to the UK, and Rory is convinced this is the opportunity that will take them to another level of wealth. But then as the global stock market gains begin to level off, Rory's dreams begin to crack, and while his family fall victim to his disease of more, his desire to be at the top of the heap starts to hurt them in ways that is subtle to begin with and then becomes awful. Law is brilliant in this role. His ability to oscillate between pure charisma and charm to an unbearably pathetic mess is a sight to see. Carrie is just as good as she plays her role with class and a savage intellect, but you can also sense her unease and anxiety bubbling away very close to the surface. The two younger actors are also just as good. Actually, the whole cast is fantastic, and it's a real statement about what happens when you try to climb the ladder of wealth when you come from a poor background, and how it can warp who you are and how it can make you start to concentrate and focus on the wrong aspects of life. Now, this might sound like a nasty viewing experience, but it's also peppered with bittersweet comedy. It's romantic. It has carnal interludes. And it also has enjoyable conversations between people you feel like you've met throughout your life. Like, there were many times that I was sitting there going, yep, I've met him. Oh, yeah, I know her. Oh, my God, I've been that person. As I said earlier, I thought this was a horror movie, and then I thought it wasn't, until I realised it had been all along. Horror stories don't have to be about demons and devils. Sometimes a horror story is about the reality of the world, when someone turns out to not be who you thought they were, and how a home can feel like a trap you are incapable of escaping. I love The Nest, and thoroughly encourage everyone who listens to this podcast to check it out whenever they can. Now let's turn our attention to episode 6 of WandaVision.
What is it, Billy?
Oh, you got it. He's in trouble.
Not like your dead husband can die twice.
What?
Full of surprises.
I'm fine.
You're the Avengers. Are you here to help us?
Why would you think that? I think a few unsavory characters settling in the neighborhood.
Are you here to help?
Something's wrong here.
There's no need to get dramatic.
Did you really not see what I saw?
She recast Pietro?
We've landed in the 90s with a Malcolm in the Middle styled opening, but it turns very dark, very quickly. A Halloween episode that allowed not only the Scarlet Witch to dress in her original comic costume, but also Vision and Quicksilver to dress like their original 60s counterparts. We saw the beginning of the twins' journey to become the Young Justice heroes Wiccan and Speed, and meanwhile our heroes outside were banished from S.W.O.R.D. facilities, but not before Monica's DNA suggested she's about to get some light-based powers, just like her comic counterpart, Photon. Also, Vision tried to escape the world Wanda has created, but it appears he can't exist outside of that bubble. Meanwhile, Pietro is seeming less likely to be the Fox version and could actually be our big bad guy. Once again, we have potential references to Mephisto, with Billy quite scared of their uncle. Billy is, of course, the magical twin, so he might be more attuned to what is going on. Pietro also says that the world Wanda has created is charming as hell and tells the twins to unleash hell, demon spawn. In their original comics appearance, the twins were created from parts of Mephisto's soul. He also tells Wanda that she can tell him anything, which is the type of thing a devil would try to do to an unsuspecting victim. Two more things. Pietro wasn't conjured by Wanda, he just appeared. He also says that he died like a chump after being shot, which isn't true because Pietro died a hero saving people in Age of Ultron. Finally, the shark in the advert is blue and white and uses the term little dude, just like Pietro. The kid in the advert also dies after 9 days because it can't open the pack. So is something awful going to happen to the twins if they don't, as the advert says, snack on yo magic? You never realise how white you are until you have to say yo. Finally, I know Pietro's hair was an Easter egg to his original haircut in the comics, but on some angles they kind of looked like horns, didn't you think? Interesting that Westview is beginning to come apart at the seams with movies at the cinema, including The Incredibles and Parent Trap, which were both released decades apart. I wonder if, like Parent Trap, the twins will swap roles to save the day. Also, the game Dance Dance Revolution wasn't a 90s game, so things aren't going to script in there. For those of you enjoying the idea that Agnes is the witch Agatha Harkness, how about her dressed as a witch for Halloween? I also enjoyed when Pietro had the word kick-ass used in conjunction with him, because Aaron Taylor Johnson was not only kick-ass in the movie, but Evan Peters was also one of his co-stars. This wasn't one of my theories, but I saw someone posit online that maybe Captain Marvel having shorter hair in Endgame is because she shaved it in solidarity with Maria going through chemo. That's interesting. I quite like that, even if it's a retro idea that's put in after the fact. But still, it doesn't matter how the story works as long as the story works, right? And maybe that's why Monica has issues with Carol, because she wasn't there when her mother died, but instead, she was out protecting the universe. There's definitely something going on there. There's a bit of frisson. We also had a reference to Monica's aerospace engineer friend. Could that be Reed Richards? I want to see how they do Reed Richards. I don't know how you can do Reed Richards. Like, I understand every part of him except the stretchy, bouncy bits. So many questions and discussion points. Let's bring in Rove. So the big question I have for you is, are you hoping that Darcy turns into her character from Two Broke Girls?
Yes, absolutely. Sitcom Darcy, that's already the fact that she, as she's going, as the hex, I guess, is taking her over, that she obviously goes to swear and it turns it into fudge. I was already going, this is fantastic. And for a show that is very happy to go deep on stuff, and whether we find out that Quicksilver is X-Men Quicksilver or just a facsimile thereof, we're acknowledging so many things in the greater world outside of Marvel. There's part of it that's like, that would be so fantastic. Or certainly some version of that. Yeah, she's a waitress or something.
She's so good as well, so I'm up for her being a part of a sitcom world now. What do you reckon it'll be? Will it be... I was trying to work out the era. Do you think it's like going to be Modern Family, or is it going to be The Office? Some talking to camera stuff?
I think we'll get into that, yeah. It'll be what The Office started that then became Modern Family, Parks and Rec, that sort of... It's a faux documentary... And we've already had this week the Malcolm in the Middle parody where we're breaking the fourth wall and talking to camera. We'll start getting in those little asides where people, mockumentary style, we're shooting all this footage, but then we do the little side interviews as well. I reckon that's where we're headed. Isn't that part of the fun of this? Is also how does each episode get presented now?
Really entertaining, because as soon as the credits started and it was like Malcolm in the Middle, you've already got a little jolt of excitement before it starts. So I'm starting to think that there's two villains in this series. So first of all, let's have a look at Pietro. I reckon he's starting to feel less like his Fox counterpart and more like something else. And what do you think's going on there?
I'm starting to get the picture that while this is Wanda's creation, it's maybe not necessarily her doing. Does that make sense? So this, you know, it's again this idea that she's been given this opportunity to overcome whatever pain that she's been through emotionally and whatever trauma by living in this bubble world that she's been given. And he is part of that. Because it seems like this is the first time, apart from Vision, but Pietro's character really wanting to go, so where have you been, where were you hiding all the kids? So tell me why all this has happened. And she's even questioning him with, do you remember that? What was the name of that kid at that school we went to, just to find out, is he who he says he is? So whether this whole construct of the Westview world is like a trap that has been laid to get information out of Wanda or something out of her, and Pietro's the plant that has been sent to get that information. Whether it is I am Mephisto in disguise or I am some other minion.
I wonder if Wanda's actually been protecting the children, if she's known that there is some sort of demonic force that is, you know, influencing what's happening in that place. And maybe this whole time the reason there haven't been any kids is because she's been keeping them at bay to make certain nothing bad happens to them.
And in the same way that she widened out the hex when she found out that that Vision has gone beyond the border. Like, how much of that is her? You know, the sign of the hex is there to protect in a way, and maybe that's why we've got this. You know, the children have been kept at bay. Interesting that we see all the people who are on the outskirts of town don't have any kind of control. Dear God, that shot of the woman putting up her washing and she's just stuck in this perpetual loop with a single tear rolling down her cheek. It's the bleakest thing I've ever seen.
That felt like a metaphor for me.
Yes, I've been in that gig. I'm just going through the motions just with the tear rolling down my cheek as I feel that internal pain. But obviously, I think it was last week she said, I'm controlling everybody and I'm setting up their dentist appointments, as Vision was kind of accusing her of setting all this up. So, yeah, I don't know that she is the mastermind behind this. And now we're seeing Hayward has this file on the town, but it seems he's following Vision. He's tracking Vision. He's not interested in Wanda. The file name, Cataract, which is to do with sight and vision.
The advert as well was pretty dark. And, you know, is there going to be something in if these kids don't snack on magic, they're all going to die? Like, this is taking a turn in a major way.
Look, we've all struggled. I thought where it was headed was we've all struggled to try to get peel the lid off some sort of yogurt, or sometimes it's when you're on a plane and you get that little, remember planes? Remember when you'd get on a plane and you had a little single serve disposable milk and you'd go to pull the top and the whole thing would pop and it would just go everywhere. I was waiting for, the poor guy's going to spill his yogurt in the sand and he gets nothing. But the idea of he couldn't even open it, and it's just all this time goes by and he dies. It was, that again, everything's it's getting dark. Things are getting really dark. We're seeing insights into the people in Westview and the pain that they're all under as well. These ads are getting darker. We're seeing flashes of, you know, people's deaths. How you know, light and fluffy it was in the 50s era of the show, which I guess was the era, and television lived that. That's how it was portrayed. You know, a married couple was not even allowed to be seen sleeping in the same bed on camera. It makes sense that as the world is starting to unravel, the Westview world is starting to unravel, or as the cracks are starting to form in this idyllic life that has either been set up by Wanda so she can have the memories of Vision and her brother and the perfect life she wished she could have, or whatever the reason, it's starting to crack, and it's being mirrored by the maturing of the type of television show you would see. That means you can get darker, you can have the dog dying, you can have, you know, scary Halloween episodes and things like that. So it's starting to have me go, geez, who's in control here? What's in control? Is it the TV show? Is it Wanda? Is it someone else? Is it even just the people at S.W.O.R.D.? They've got something to do with it. Like, I still feel like, yeah, we will get that answer, but it really could be anyone.
It feels definitely demonic, even if it's not Mephisto. You know, as we keep talking about, it's meant to dovetail into the next Doctor Strange movie, so you could have Dormammu come back. I felt like there was a papier-mâché Dormammu in the Halloween scenes in the background at one point, or it could be Nightmare, who is a Doctor Strange villain who lives in the land of dreams and feeds on the psychic energy of people when they're asleep. But, you know, Pietro has the same colours as the shark, and the shark acts kind of rad the way that Pietro acts. And then, you know, he keeps referring to the kids as Hellspawn. He's got devilish behaviour, running around, jumping up and down on the pumpkins.
There was a lot of that, and especially calling the twins Ray's Hell Devil Spawn, which is like, geez, could you be more obvious than that? Because in the comic books, they are, I think they're a physical offshoot of...
I think they're the demon Master Pandemonium's hands, but they have the souls of Mephisto.
Yes.
Because comics.
Yes, that's right. Because comics, exactly. So, yeah, it's always that thing of how much is that just a red herring? Or how much of it is, well, okay, for people who are just watching this TV show and don't quite understand the full folklore of the comics, we're giving you all these clues so when the reveal happens, you can go back and appreciate that it was all there in plain, hiding in plain sight. But, yeah, that part of it was all really, really interesting to think, okay, so that's who the big bad could be. But, yeah, there's still no guarantees, is there? Because there's a lot of imagery in there. The one thing that I also sort of thought was interesting this week was with Agnes, when she had her moment. Yeah, again, she's dressed as a witch, as we came up with last week. Is that just playing to everybody's fan theories, or is it a legitimate sign that she could be? But in the past, she's been quite self-aware of that she's in the show. Her and Herb talking over the fence, like, you know, when Vision came out a couple of episodes ago and Agnes was the one who turned around to Herb and said, oh no, let's not talk about, you know, what happened when Wanda's not here. Last week she was saying, hey, do you want me to do that line again, because he screwed up his bit. And then this week all of a sudden she's trapped in the show and doesn't know, and Vision has to snap her out, when in the past she's been very self-aware. So was that her just playing a ruse to get Vision on side?
Also at the crossroads as well, which is usually a place that you meet the devil to make some sort of bargain, which was kind of fascinating. It's planting all of these seeds, and it feels like, you know, like the best kind of stand-up routine has jokes that the audience gets as you're saying it. So I'm wondering if they're laying these things, so when we do the reveal, there's stuff that makes us feel good about ourselves, because we went, yes, we did think it was Mephisto, and then there'll be something that takes us by surprise.
Yeah. It's been suitably done to have you go, yeah, whatever theory you've come up with is probably going to be right, because we're spraying so much stuff out there. It's not just all roads lead to Mephisto. It could be multiple options, which I think could at some point mean that, well, you took a guess because you used pretty much every name on the list as to who it could be. But the other great thing is there's still so many other things we haven't sort of properly worked out yet. Like when is this actually happening? The idea that, what's the one I picked up on this week? Oh yeah. Monica keeps talking about my guy who's coming. And there's a couple of times she's mentioned that I've got a guy on the inside. I know a guy. And you're like, okay, who could that be? It could be War Machine. It could be, part of me is like, is it Reed Richards? Is this how we get the Fantastic Four in? I'm also not ruling out the idea of the big bad being Magneto. Could be that. Like, this is maybe how we get the X-Men in there. Because am I right in assuming that the MCU, in the movie sense, hasn't acknowledged mutants? We don't have mutants. We have people with superpowers.
No, mutants were owned by Fox. So that's why in Avengers Age of Ultron, they're allowed to use Quicksilver and Scarlet Witch because they appeared as characters in the Avengers, but they weren't allowed to talk about mutants. They weren't allowed to talk about any of those characters. They weren't allowed to be.
How they got their powers. Yeah. So whether this is a way of bringing all of that into the Marvel Universe or not, it's interesting.
I have a theory on that, which is, so, you know, Monica's DNA is changing. So that means everyone in Wanda's world is having their DNA change as well. So is this the way that they introduce mutants into the world? Because Marvel likes to take stories from the comics and give them a spin. So, you know, in Captain Marvel, the Skrulls weren't bad guys. You know, that was a little spin that they did there. So in House of M, Wanda took away the mutant power, but I wonder if in the MCU she's going to be the reason she births mutants and then... are Tommy and Billy the first mutants? Because they're the first characters we've seen born with powers. And then if they're playing the long game, you know, in 10 years' time, once the stink of the FU's done and, you know, you can start to introduce mutants into the... Like, that's how you reboot for Phase 5 or something like that.
Well, now we've engulfed all of the ancillary... Well, we've got the townsfolk anyway that have been sitting there, like you say. We've got all the S.W.O.R.D. military personnel have been brought in as well. So, you know, you could say, yeah, that's affecting some of the people there. I certainly think that's exactly the point of Monica. She's come and gone and come and gone. So it seems that's exactly where we're leading to, is how she gets her powers. So that makes sense. Because how much they want to put on giving an origin story to, yeah, this is how mutants came about or not, because it's not, I don't think it's necessary, but geez, it'd be a cool thing if they do it.
It's hard to retroactively introduce them because then your first thing is, where were they for the Battle of New York? Where were they when, you know, they're already going to have to try and, like, they're going to have to come up with something tricky to answer that for the Eternals. So how you can't play that card twice. So maybe this is the origin point and then that allows the Homo Superior thing to kick in and it just starts to give them somewhere to go down the track. And they're not afraid to do like a 5-year jump like they did with Endgame. So
yeah, and also, let's be honest, they will want to restart all of that and put their own stamp on it. They're not just going to say, okay, now that we've got all of our IP back, and that means we can have X-Men and we can have Wolverine and Fantastic Four and all the other things that we've missed out on. It doesn't mean that we're just going to say that all those slew of other movies that happened over the past, you know, 15 years is in any way acknowledged by us. So that we, you know, yes, they happen, but we are the ones who have made this genre something. We are the ones that have created this world. We don't acknowledge that anything happens on the DC side. And even if they were to acquire all those characters, they'll start again and they'll turn them into what they want them to turn into. They're not going to suddenly, you know, turn around and go, okay, how do we fit Wolverine into this because he's never turned up before. They go, no, we'll just start again. We'll just start again. And this is how.
And Hugh's back eating lasagna at this very moment, sleeping until seven.
Look, that then he would look like that woman hanging washing on her line as he's doing reps, but it would be he's just doing a bicep curl and that same tear rolling down his cheeks. But yeah, that part of it is really, that's really interesting to me, is the, okay, so I don't think, I still am not convinced that Vision is actually alive. It's just, is it the idea of Vision? Quite clearly, he has no memory of who he is. He's like, what's an Avenger? What do you mean I'm an Avenger? And what do you mean I'm dead? That makes no sense to me. So that's really interesting. The fact that some of the characters in Westview need to be snapped out of their haze where then they can become like a Vision's co-worker where he's like, oh, God, you've got to stop her. You've got to stop her. And then he's like, hey, let's get back to this stat sheet. But then Agnes and Herb are across everything that's going on. Like Herb saying, oh, do you want me to change? Are you happy? Is everything okay? Is there anything you want to change? Like, just let us know. So he's across it, which I also find very interesting because his character is head of the neighborhood watch. So he's watching the neighborhood. So who is he? And on the, as far as I can recollect, on the board of people who are in the WandaVision show within the show, let's say the Westview population, that the S.W.O.R.D. personnel have found, you know, their real identities and have shown, okay, here's who's been cast. Agnes and Herb are not on that list as far as I know. So it seems, okay, well who are they and where are they playing into this game? And same with Pietro and him saying, oh, I don't remember anything either. You summoned me and here I am. So it's all that.
We also know that Wanda didn't summon him. Like when he turned up.
She's just as surprised as anyone. And suspicious. And suspicious.
I think one of the things that Watchmen did really well was it set up all these things that you wanted answered, and then it did things like, oh, and by the way, Dr. Manhattan was this character for seven episodes, and you go, oh, I didn't even know that was going to be a thing. And that's what made me start thinking about this having two lots of villains. Like S.W.O.R.D., as you already said, Project Cataract is really interesting because, as you said, a cataract affects your vision. They used to do manned space missions, and now they're into robotics, nanotech, and sentient weapons. So maybe there's like two bad things going on at the same time.
And you wouldn't put it past anyone at Marvel to go, yeah, we've got because Falcon and Winter Soldier is the next series that will happen, the Disney Plus series. So we'll need something for that, as well as the movies that are coming. You've got Doctor Strange and A World of Others coming. So it's not like, you know, we don't just need one big bad. We're suddenly, you know, they're spreading out everywhere like a hex. They're going out like we're going to engulf all of television as much as we're going to engulf all of film. So, yeah, they've got to get in. And there's no reason to think that the reveal at the end of this is just everything leads to Doctor Strange. I see no reason why there wouldn't be splinter sideline stories as much as they have at every end of every film in the past. Here's your little post-credit sequence that sometimes is teasing to something that's 2-3 films ahead. So sure, you know, like Hayward's, he's a really interesting character from the S.W.O.R.D. side of like, I was holding down the fort while you were all gone. I was looked after your mother's legacy. You don't know what it was like. You know, he's kicked the three of them out. So even he is a big bad. It's like, okay, what's his motivation? And the S.W.O.R.D. had Vision's body. Wanda's come to get it. How much of that was a trap to lure her in to do what they wanted? Like is part of this setup in the hex to create mutants, nothing to do with Mephisto and who's been maybe, you know, getting in Wanda's head, but this is S.W.O.R.D.'s setup to have mutant, you know, to have their own army of people with superpowers to battle all of the superhero Avenger types that are out there.
What is it? You can dissect a frog and learn everything about it, but you can't breathe life into it, and which is also runs for jokes. You can dismantle a joke and then can never put it back together again for it to be funny. Maybe they dismantled Vision, couldn't bring him to life, and they lured her in and then thought, well, maybe she'll do something that will bring him back to life, but in the process has woken something up that they weren't expecting, and this trap has gotten out of their hands.
Exactly. It's an experiment gone wrong. That is absolutely, absolutely. Ask the guys that invented the atom bomb.
With the adverts, it feels like, you know, the first ad references Stark, and it feels like it's talking about Stark bombs killing her family. And then the second ad was the Strucker watch, and Baron von Strucker did the tests on the siblings. And then the third act was the Lagos wipes, which is the accident from Civil War. So the shark giving a starving child yo magic is like, it does kind of make it feel like maybe, like, I'm still leaning towards Mephisto. By the way, the kid lasts 9 days before dying, and this series has 9 episodes.
Oof, that's great. The other part of that's where I got distracted. If I sounded like I lost my train of thought before talking about big bads, that's why. So the slogan, and I should have written this down, the slogan for the yogurt commercial was Yo Magic Keeps You Alive or something like that.
Snack on Yo Magic.
Yeah, but it was snack on Yo Magic. It keeps you alive or something like that. Or it has the power to keep you alive. And obviously, any kind of yogurt gets called yo play, or, you know, you work the yo in there. Yo-go was one of them, because you can eat it. But the yo magic is also, you know, there's that slang term for, you know, like that's the street term for your is yo. So like, your mama, those sorts of things. So the idea that yo magic is actually saying your magic, snacking on your magic is keeping me alive. So that's where the shark, to me, could be a Mephisto thing, because he's the one who's saying, hey, thanks for giving me your magic, because that's feeding me.
Hence why hiding the kids, because maybe they're the most delicious of magic snacks. There's also a theory that the adverts represent the Infinity Stones, which I won't get into this time, but it's...
Yeah, I've seen that too. I've heard that, you know, the colours of them are all indicative of that. I think was it the orange juice that was in last week's ad, the kids were drinking in this one. To me, that's all fun stuff. If you want to go deep diving, you can find. I don't know how much of it is... You know, you'll get to the final episode and go, oh my God, that's what it all was. Yeah, I think there's also something to be said for, yeah, we're just having fun with playing with the styles of commercials for the era as well. I was talking to my nephew, as a side note, who is 15, coming up to 15, and loves all this sort of stuff. He and I bond quite a bit talking over things like The Mandalorian and Doctor Who and WandaVision now. And what was adorable talking to a young man was he said it took him a little while to get started on the show and connect with it because he thought there was something wrong with his feed of the episode one because it was in black and white. And he said, I couldn't get into it straight away because I was trying to adjust the color on my television because I was trying to work out what went wrong, what was going wrong with it. And I was like, yeah, no, it was meant to be in black and white. Television.
Yeah, he was like, oh, did you used to turn your television to grayscale because you were getting too addicted to it and you wanted to?
Yeah, I've hit something. I've hit something on the remote by accident, and all the color's gone out of my television. Hilarious. What is happening? This is really distracting for me trying to understand what this 50s sitcom is all about because it's in black and white.
That's so cute. I've got two quick questions for you to finish off with. So do you want the villain to be Mephisto, Dormammu, Nightmare, or someone else? Is there someone else that you would prefer it to be? You kind of suggested that you'd like it to almost be Magneto, but where do you want it to go?
Yeah, I think I'd like it. I'd like it to be Mephisto. I think that's the one that you know, essentially he's the Marvel Universe's Satan. So what a, especially again, knowing that we're dealing with Wanda and Doctor Strange, what a great character to have. And you kind of need something like that after Thanos. You can go somewhere else I don't want to say lesser villain, but you know, I don't know if you want to bring out Juggernaut at some point, go for it. But you do need, yeah, you need a really decent big bad now. And I think he's a good one. And if it turns out to be him, I won't be disappointed that it's where it seemed to be going from the start at all.
You know, what's kind of interesting is that the comics seem to start suggesting who's going to be coming along in the movies. And it's almost like at a grassroots level, they start introducing characters or bringing them to the fore. Like there was a lot of Thanos stuff in the lead up to everything happening. And it's like, geez, Thanos has really made a comeback since the 90s and all that kind of stuff. And Mephisto's been the bad guy in Jason Aaron and Ed McGuinness's run on the Avengers, which has been quite fascinating to see. But also they're working up to a big storyline where they've got the Squadron Supreme. Do you know those characters?
No.
So they're an analogue for the Justice League of America. They were first created back in the 60s so Marvel could have a crossover with DC. They were called the Squadron Sinister. So you had Hyperion, who was like Superman.
Yeah, I know those characters.
It would be funny if they introduced the Squadron Supreme and then did JLA correctly.
Well, look, little things like, I know everyone's aware of this anyway, but just the fact that all the characters were in the comic book costumes was just inspired. And what a great, you know, under the guise of it's a Halloween episode and, oh, thanks for this costume because I know how you've always liked Mexican luchadors, to justify what Vision is wearing. Any little nod like that, I think, is always very, very special. And they've done that well. So, yeah, if they could bring those sorts of characters in, it would be tremendous. A piss weak version of Superman.
That'd be great. And finally, if Monica's aerospace engineer friend turns out to be Reed Richards, what are you more excited for? Fantastic Four or X-Men in the MCU?
Ooh, probably Fantastic Four. I think because it would be nice to have those. I've always enjoyed those characters. Whether it's the, you know, Human Torch or Silver Surfer versions, or, you know, Ben Grimm is great. There's something just about, you know, a guy in orange rocks that's always great. They were one of my first favorite superhero teams, and I don't know that they properly got to, certainly, you know, the original, I say original, but the Yoan Griffith, Jessica Alba version of the Fantastic Four was pretty good. I think the more recent try obviously didn't even make a splash. So it would be good. X-Men have had a good run, I guess is what I'm getting to. X-Men have told some great stories. They've told some not so great stories. They've been able to expand and stretch out the universe a little bit with solo films from some of the characters and work them into other things. It would be nice to just see what the Fantastic Four can do, because they've got so much potential that I don't think has even been scratched on the surface yet. So they would excite me more.
And I'm also just curious to see, I've always thought the impediment to Fantastic Four is Mr. Fantastic's powers, which look ridiculous. But we've already seen Ego the Living Planet and Rocket Raccoon. And you go, well, I guess you guys might be able to pull it off, right?
Yeah, I really feel they'll find a way. They know what they're doing. They really do. Like, this is, you have to remember now, these characters are in the hands of a team and one man in particular who just knows where he's going. And yeah, it'll be, and this may well be, yeah, we get introduced to Reed Richards and it's, you know, it's scientist Reed Richards. They haven't even gone up and in the ship and had the crash landing and got their powers or anything like that yet. So, you know, it could be real long game stuff that we're looking
I'd be into meeting them before they get the powers. That would be a fun.
Oh my God, how great would that be? I would love it if it's not suddenly we have a fully formed superhero team, that we've got a long way to go to bring them in. That would be marvelous. And I know so beautifully done so that you're ready for it, because they're all, you know, they're great characters in their own right without needing the powers to make them interesting. And can we make a quick mention of the squid bit with the reference to Kick-Ass?
Oh yes, I've mentioned it in the intro, which you wouldn't have heard yet, but it's so cute, isn't it? The when that happened, it's like, wait a minute, they were both in Kick-Ass. I completely forgotten that.
I just thought, oh, same as the, you know, on the marquees, the Incredibles and Parent Trap. And it's just, oh, it's one of those things. We're just referencing the era that we're in. And it wasn't until because I thought, oh, afterwards, oh, that's right. And that's also, I'm pretty sure that's a Marvel brand film.
I don't think it is. That's Mark Millar who created it. But I can't forget, I can't remember what imprint he published it under, which is a good question to ask.
But yeah, I thought, that's an interesting one that it seemed like that's exactly what they were referencing. And then, yeah, went to look up if there was any other connection to it, and then immediately got the two actors that have played Quicksilver were in that movie, which is just amazing.
That was an Image comic that Mark Millar.
Oh, of course. Right. Okay.
You know, I think that had Hit Girl dropping C-bombs, so there was no way that was coming out of Marvel.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's true.
Well, that was great. Thank you for being on the show, and I look forward to catching up next week so we can unpack where the hell this is going.
Oh, it's great. It's unfolding nicely. I love it. I love where we've gone this week. And, you know, after the big reveal of episode 5, 6 settled in really nicely with more little breadcrumbs leading us to the finish line. I can't wait.
Thank you. Time to bring Rachel Melanta in for her hot takes on which aliens the Doctor has had sex with over the years. This is pretty much covering only from Eccleston onwards, and Rachel felt like she still doesn't quite have the angle on Jodie Whittaker's Doctor to make a decision. But the rest of her thoughts are included, and they're out there. Like, they're really out there. It's a fun catch-up. I had a lot of fun with this podcast. When Rachel brought up this topic, I couldn't think of anyone that Jodie's Doctor would have had sex with, because I think she's asexual. Don't you? Like, that's not a criticism, by the way. I just don't find her to have kind of any buzz going. And I did wonder a couple of times if there's an attraction with Yaz, and there was only one episode where I thought, oh, something about to happen, and that was the episode with Nikola Tesla. But otherwise, she hasn't sparked that vibe in me. Do you agree? If you feel like being a part of this ridiculous chat, head over to our Facebook page, join our private conversation group, and leave your thoughts. I've written a post there that you can tell us all your ideas on who the Doctor's had sex with, and if you agree with me on my take on Jodie Whittaker. It's Doctor Who. There are no incorrect takes. It's such a long and varied show. We're all coming at it from very different angles, so I would love to hear what you have to think. And also, you know what I'll do is I'll share some of your thoughts in the next episode. So come along, and as I said, I'll leave a subject heading there and you can leave it underneath. But in the meantime, sit back and hear Rachel just come in hot with her Doctor Who theories. I can't remember what season of Doctor Who you're up to in your rewatch, because you've gone back from Christopher Eccleston, is that right?
Yes. I'm currently on season 9, I believe. Yes, I'm back with...
Okay. And have you watched all these seasons a few times, or is this something that this is your first time going through the rewatch?
I've watched pretty much up to where I am a few times. Like, I've watched up to the end of Capaldi a few times, but I've only watched Jodie Whittaker once. Like, but all the earlier ones I've watched, particularly Eccleston.
Oh, that's your guy?
Well, he's not my... Tennant's my guy. Eccleston I rate as...
Oh, really? On the, your Doctor Who ratings. So I'm guessing, since you've only seen Jodie, her stuff once, do you have her ranked yet, or do you need to see where she finishes up before you give her a ranking?
She has not been ranked yet. She's still chilling in that she's in limbo. I've ranked the other four, and I feel like she just hasn't had her opportunity yet to really come alive. Like, I feel like all the others kind of have had their real moment to show off what kind of doctor they're being, what, you know, I feel like they've kind of had more of an opportunity in their own sort of special storyline. And I feel like she hasn't, I feel like I just haven't fully seen her yet.
There's not that episode that you can point to and say that's the one. So what would you say is Eccleston's number one episode?
I actually love the one with the, where it crashes into the Big Ben, the Slitheen. I think the Slitheen are actually probably my favourite alien of all of them. Because firstly, I love the earlier seasons because, like, the CGI is very questionable, and I find that very amusing. I love that. And I just love the Slitheen. I just love them.
The early CGI is feeling very much in keeping with the original series in that, yes, the CGI has improved, but it's still a little bit dodgy.
But it's supposed to be. Like, that's the thing. I was talking about this the other day with... When you introduce somebody new to Doctor Who now, like, they've never seen it, never heard of it, and it's not very big in Canada, so, like, most of my friends have never watched Doctor Who, and you kind of have to explain to them that it's supposed to be a little bit camp. Like, it's supposed to be a little bit corny and just extra, you know? It's not really supposed to, like, a lot of the aliens... You're just kind of supposed to get the gist, you know, like, yep, that's doing that. It's not, yeah, I don't know. It's not supposed to be.
Well, it's also family entertainment. That's the thing that lots of people forget, especially some older fans when they get all bent out of shape over things. And, you know, it's like, you know, a grandfather can watch this with their granddaughter and everyone in between can enjoy it. And so anyway, so that's your favourite Eccleston. What's the Tennant episode? Because for me, Eccleston is the Dalek episode, where that was the first time that you kind of really got a sense of, before we knew what the Time War was and where the Doctor had been in that whole adventure, that was the first time that you went, oh man, this guy is struggling.
I was very invested with Eccleston from the beginning. Like, I really liked him as the Doctor. I think it's a shame he left after one season, but I mean, you gotta do what you gotta do. I respect it, you know. But I do think his Dalek episodes are the best Dalek episode, you know what I mean? Like, I think he is the strongest in that. Yeah, I really liked him. I thought he was the sexiest Doctor.
Really? Wow, that's interesting. And what about Tennant?
Tennant, honestly, I have a theory with Tennant. I think Tennant is the best Doctor, but it took me a minute to warm up to him. Like, when the first regeneration, the, like, Christmas episode where he's in bed the entire time, pretty much, it took me a minute. I think it took like 3 or 4 episodes before I liked him. I was really kind of anti-Tennant when he first came in. And every time I rewatch, I kind of, like, I go through that because I was so sort of attached to Eccleston. And then I let him go, you know, I let it go. But then I warm up to Tennant. But I love anything with the Weeping Angels with Tennant. But my theory with him, because I've spoken to you about this in the past, that I have a theory about the Doctor bangs different aliens.
Right? Well, hang on, I want to get to that. But so Tennant, it was about 2 or 3 episodes in, not a specific episode, but mainly the Blink episode is the one where you kind of point to him.
And that terrified me too, because I have a fear of statues. Yeah,
no, I understand that. I think that's one of those fears that more people have that they didn't realise until they saw the episode Blink.
Oh, I've been, like, fully aware. I've always been scared of statues. I used to walk home from the casino when I used to work there in Sydney, and I used to add an extra 10 minutes to my trip to avoid the Queen Victoria building because I'm scared of the Queen Victoria statue.
Would have really struggled in Gothic days. What about Matt Smith?
He's my least favourite.
That's fascinating.
Yeah. I never liked him. I respect what Matt Smith did with the character. He went for like a goofier, cuter doctor. I get that. I respect what he was going for, but I never trusted him as the doctor. And I feel like and I appreciate that he had a rough go, like following Tennant, who is like everyone's favorite pretty much. But I don't know, like I never fully believed him as the doctor. And I felt like at certain times, like his goofier kind of jokey, ooh, I don't know what's going on sort of vibe at times. I need to trust my doctors. Like, that's it for me. And I just never really connected with him on that. Having said that, I do think he had one of the best companions with Amy Pond, though I don't understand why Rory was there. I think Rory's only role was because the previous companion, like Martha, was in love with the doctor, right? So I think that because they kind of had Rose, who was like the sexual tension.
Yeah, but you had Donna straight after Martha.
But Martha then came back for a minute. You know what I mean? Like they were kind of intertwined.
Yep.
And I don't really even count Donna as a real companion for half of it, right?
Really?
But she was sort of into him as well. Like, but I feel like there'd been like a lot of romantic.
There was a very, very clear delineation of just being mates. Like there's that point where he says, I'm just looking for a mate. And she freaks out because she thinks he wants to have sex with her.
There was.
No. I never saw tension between them.
I love Catherine Tate, but I saw tension there. Yeah.
That's so funny because I only ever saw them as pals that were really, like really caring of each other, but I never saw any tension. Whereas Matt Smith, I totally bought he was the doctor quicker than anyone who's ever regenerated. And it was from the moment he started trying food.
I thought that was just a different character. I enjoyed him as the character he was playing, but I did not believe. Like, I don't know whether I was just so invested in the previous two. Like, I just couldn't imagine Tennant doing some those sorts of things. Like, I don't know. I just didn't buy it. I didn't buy it.
Yeah, that's because he wasn't Tennant's doctor. If he came out and gone, oh, look at me, I'm the sex god doctor, you would have been going, oh, he's just doing a Tennant. He also was darker as well. Like when he would, when he's talking to young Amelia and he says, you know, when parents tell you that everything's going to be okay, but you don't really believe them because you think they're lying. And she says, yeah. And he looks at her and says, everything's going to be okay. And you go, oh, this guy is fantastic. So, but what about Capaldi then?
Loved him the moment he regenerated. I was on board with Capaldi. I just love Peter Capaldi to start with, but I like just as an actor, I think he's amazing. But I think I love his kind of darker, angrier edge. Like he's kind of got this more shorter fuse, less shit-taking edge. And I just love him. I think the moment he regenerated, I was fully on board with Capaldi. 100%.
And what was his episode, do you think? Oh, hang on. What was the Matt Smith episode what was the one that you said that you liked?
Matt Smith episode, I think like the vampires maybe.
Really?
I really enjoyed him with the vampires.
The vampires.
I think that was kind of the first episode where I kind of went with him. Like, I don't know, I thought it just showed a complex side of him.
What about the two-parter with the Weeping Angels, which is like, which is the aliens to the alien?
But I've given Weeping Angels to Tennant.
You're allowed to share. What are these self-imposed rules?
I have very strict rules around my doctors.
I don't know why you are imposing these upon yourself. Okay. All right. The vampires episode. That's great.
I like him with the vampires. I liked, I don't know. Like I saw some tension there. I liked him getting kind of caught in there. I don't know. I liked that episode. I thought he was really good with like the period episodes, like in weird ways. I liked him as that, but I don't know. I liked a lot of his storyline with Amy Pond. I thought she was a great companion. But going back to Rory, I don't understand him there. I really think the only reason he is in there is because the previous companions had been like kind of a sexual tension sort of thing, and they needed to delineate, like they needed to specifically say this is different. So they added in a husband or boyfriend when they first started in order to, you know what I mean, like delineate that that's not that. And also, I mean, like the whole River Song storyline. But yeah, I think that's his only point because he just sort of seemed to be there a lot of the time.
Well, I liked Rory because he wasn't necessarily taken in by some of the Doctor's excesses, and he kind of helped point out things to Amelia, which were, hey, this is a bit insane. And
I think it's important to have the two of them together because you actually see them grow. You know, it's a very young relationship when you first see them together. And then over time, it becomes this stronger bond and they grow together. I quite like Rory.
I appreciate that he played a part because of the River Song storyline, because I think River Song's probably like my favorite like side character. I love her.
See, I love River Song as well, but I have, there were a group of girls that used to go to the comedy show that I ran in Melbourne, The Shelf, and Rebecca and Sam and any of them who might be listening, and I would talk to them afterwards because they were all big Doctor Who fans, and they hated River Song. Hated River Song, and I just could not comprehend why. And they, I can't go into all of the reasons because it'd be an hour and a half podcast. But they would just bang on these certain points. So I'm always, this is what I love about Doctor Who, is that you can be a fan of it, but because it changes so much, you can have such different takes on it.
Definitely, no, I absolutely love River Song. It actually like annoyed me there wasn't more. I kind of wanted her, you know, like when he offered to take her along as a companion. I wanted her to be a companion, like properly. I wanted to see them be married. I wanted to see the Doctor be in love.
And the, for me, the Capaldi episode that is like his, the episode that you would point to is when he takes a billion years to punch through a wall of diamond.
Yes. No, I just honestly, I love him from day one. I was very on board with Capaldi. Clara, I like as a companion as well. Honestly, the only companion I haven't liked is Martha. But Rose was the best companion.
Poor Martha. Yeah. Martha cops some short shrift. I think I don't think Rose much of a fan of Martha. But she kind of leaves for the most interesting reason in some ways, in that just kind of knowing that you're never going to live up to you know, rejecting a situation where you know you're always going to be second best is weirdly what more people should be doing and kind of a little bit ahead of the curve.
She just annoys me that she never, ever... Look, I feel like half of Martha's episodes were just, like, helping Martha get out of a situation that she wouldn't have been in if she'd just listened to the Doctor. Like, I feel like all she did was, like, she just... don't do this. And then Martha straight away did that. And it just sort of felt like it became a little bit formulaic with her at times, where it was like, okay, she's just gonna...
She also gets that amazing two-parter where the Doctor hides his personality in John Smith and she's the maid and she's the one that has to kind of get him out of that.
Yeah, okay, that's very fair. They were really great episodes.
Oh, like they're scorchers. And the ending to that is dark, dark, dark.
That is actually probably one of my top five, like... episode arcs. My favorite episode all of them is The Day of the Doctor. It's a special episode, and I know it's a bit of a cliche one because everyone loves it because you've got lots of doctors in the one, but I loved it start to finish. I loved Tennant and Smith together. I loved that Tom Baker made like a little at the end as the curator. That made me happy. I loved that episode. That's my favorite. But no, yeah, that one and, Matt Smith's Weeping Angels ones were actually really good too. I know I just took Weeping Angels away from him, but they were, they're up there too.
Like, Tennant gets Alien and Matt Smith gets Aliens. That's what you get with those versions of the Weeping Angels.
I think I'm just not ready to love Matt Smith.
I don't think so either. Funnily enough, he is my favourite, and I think...
He's your favourite?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that first season of Matt Smith is pretty much perfect.
I think there were some really, really cute moments with him. I think like on a more like, he had some like emotional moments. I loved Amy Pond, but I don't know. I just felt like the entire time he was there, I kept on like being pulled out of episodes because I just kind of went, I don't really trust you.
So I want to get back to you. You've thought about the Doctor and who they've had sex with. Which aliens, right?
I take that very, very seriously.
No, I get that. I didn't doubt it. So I'm guessing you don't really have, like, sometimes it's easier to have a proper take on a Doctor once they're done as the Doctor. So we're leaving Jodie Whittaker out of this. And
not assigned her an alien yet because, well, I just feel like, once again, I haven't fully seen her. She hasn't come into her own yet.
Yeah, I feel like there's not quite... Like, I really love Jodie as an actor, and I've loved her in other things that I've watched, and I like her take on the Doctor, but there isn't quite that episode. Like, even probably her best episode, where we discovered the Doctor that we'd never heard of before, Doctor Ruth.
Oh, yeah, that's definitely her best episode so far.
Yeah, and because it gives her so much to do, and she's just, you know, so good at it.
That's a really good way of putting it. I feel like at times she doesn't have enough to do.
There's been too many companions, and I would have preferred when the series came back, even though I loved Graham, but I would have preferred it was just the Doctor and Yaz, to be honest. And I would have just been totally into a series of the two of them, because I think Yaz has the potential to be really interesting, and I never really cared about Ryan. So I would have preferred to have seen the two of them. And then you get more time for both characters to build a little bit. And there would have been an interesting dichotomy between the person who's been raised as a policewoman to the Doctor, who is, this Doctor's quite childlike and, you know, very much leans more into the pacifism. So that would have been interesting to explore.
And I really like that with her. Like, I like, as you said, like the character there. And I actually love the regeneration as a female. Like, I love that as a, like, not even from like a female representation point of view, but more just like, I love that as just a character feature, that the Doctor can regenerate as any gender, anything. I would be interested in whether like future regenerations, now that we know it's more unlimited situation with the regenerations, whether we will see different races and stuff like that, and that sort of representation in the future as the Doctor. But I absolutely love the character that, like, the Doctor can regenerate as any gender, whatever. But, yeah, I agree that I just feel like at times she doesn't have enough to do, I feel. But so I haven't assigned her an alien yet.
But just before we get to that, so how would you feel if the Doctor regenerated as an alien? Like, or does the Doctor always have to be human? Well, human-looking, but do you know what I mean?
Yeah, human-lost, because technically the Doctor is an alien, but... No, it needs to be human. That's where I draw the line, right?
Seems kind of racist, Rachel.
I draw the line at that point. I'm sorry.
You don't want a whole season of the Doctor looking like a Dalek with Tom Baker's scarf wrapped around its sucker?
Just a bow tie like Matt Smith, but that's it.
The comic book writer and author Alan Moore, when back in the 80s, there's the... have you ever heard of... You know the superhero, the Green Lantern? So there's... For people who have never read the comics, they're an intergalactic police force, and there's lots of Green Lanterns. And invariably, when you would read the comics in the past, pretty much all the aliens looked a little bit humanoid, etc. And then Alan Moore introduced this idea where, you know, one of the Green Lanterns was from a planet where it was all bacteria. So it was just bacteria that was, and it would infect people and give them colds. And that's how it would take down bad guys. And another alien that had no sight, so it just worked on sound. And I wonder if you could take the Doctor into a really bizarre area. It would be good for cartoons or something.
I wouldn't want to see an entire season of it, but, like, I would be totally open to, like, a special where he's just bacteria.
Just bacteria.
I would watch that. 100% I would watch that. And we'd all kind of go, like, it'd be that episode where, like, I don't think it could go longer than an episode, but it would be that episode where forevermore, which, like, remember that time it was just bacteria? And that would just be brilliant.
Remember Dr. Influenza? All right, so you've thought a lot about the Doctor and which aliens they may have had sex with.
As an introduction here, I just have always had trouble believing that there is this alien with two hearts who looks like any of the regenerations of the Doctor, who is saving the world and is never getting laid. Like, I mean, we hear like Matt Smith and that refer to like sleeping with Elizabeth I and stuff randomly, like as offside jokes, but otherwise... he's just never having any fun, right? I just don't believe that. I mean, he's kind of vulnerable. He's sort of lonely. I mean, like, someone's going to try and fix him, you know? I reckon, I just don't believe that it's never going down. He brings his house everywhere with him.
Seems a bit creepy when you put it that way.
Yeah, a little bit creepy. But, I mean, I love it. I mean, it's kind of going back to, like, oh my God, is Doc Is the doctor like van life, but before van life was a...
Yeah, maybe. Should go and check to see if the doctor's on TikTok.
Yeah, the doctor invented living in a van.
I'd love to see an episode of Doctor Who and the TARDIS has got like artwork spray painted on the side. So, Christopher Eccleston.
Yeah, I reckon it's Levine. I said it earlier, I reckon it's his episode, and I reckon that 100%.
Really?
100%. But the real question there is going to be, the only question is whether at the time it occurred, was the Slovene wearing the human skin suit or was like au naturel, you know? What was the scenario? That is the only question. Other than that, it definitely happened.
Well, the good thing about that is what it suggests is that if the Slovene is not in human form or wearing a human kind of mask, as it were, that means that that doctor is not looking down on people who have curves.
And I think that's beautiful.
And that's a very nice thing to think about with Christopher Eccleston.
And I think Christopher Eccleston would be that way. I believe that.
They're a bit farty though, aren't they? Like, do you think the Slovene accidentally farts in front of him and he's like, don't worry about it, it's all good.
They only fart in the skin suits. If they're not wearing
of course.
Skin suits, they don't fart. So it could only be one or the other. He's either got farty or Slovene.
Either way, he's not judging.
Yeah, honestly, I'm on board with it and I reckon it's happening. Because I've weighed up like different things here, right? And I think he had a lot of time alone because Rose was off a lot. They were separated a lot during those episodes. And see, because you have to weigh all these things up. You know, when I look into which alien the doctor's banged, I think about like who was the companion at the time. Would that companion have allowed that to happen? Did they have time? You know, these are the things, you know. So I think Rose was off a lot. They were left alone in a lot of ways. Yeah, I reckon it went down. There were separate episodes, you know, like they were separated at that time, which means why did they come back?
I'm just going to give you my comparisons to these things. So that's your take on Christopher Eccleston. My take is that he had too much PTSD and he was probably more likely to be drinking alone in an intergalactic bar and being hit on and just saying, I'm not really up for it. But anyway, I'm not saying it's correct.
He's the sexiest doctor.
For you.
You don't find Christopher Eccleston sexy, Justin?
Nah, not really. Like, I love him, but not really.
Nah, something's wrong with you. Look, we need to move on because I need to get on to David Tennant, right? Because I have very serious thoughts about this. So he was the most scientific doctor, you would say. Like, you know, he had the most science-y ways, right? So I think he did a weeping angel. And let me talk you through it. Okay.
Goodness.
Right. Because I think he would be the only doctor sciencey enough to work out how. Because remember, you can't touch them and you can't look at them. Because if you look at them, they're going to be stone and you can't bang stone.
Well.
So he needs to keep his eyes shut, but also not touch them. And I reckon he'd be the only one smart enough to work that out.
But hang on. So what are you saying? Work out how to have sex with them?
Like, yeah, I think that the relationship could flourish with Tennant. That's my theory. But then I have to think about, like, how? Like, that's a lot of layers of protection to not in any way touch. And also, we don't really know how they move and operate when not stone, because we only ever see them frozen. Like, they move, but they're frozen at all times, you know? So, like maybe, yeah, that's, to me, I think that went down 100%.
Well, maybe he was having sex and he was just blinking really quickly, so that meant they were moving really quickly.
Like, he would have, like, it would have been, like, that's got to be painful because they'd just be, like, stone around him.
Look, this is your theory. I'm just trying to work out how it would have happened.
Well, that's what I'm trying to work out. I'm assuming he closed his eyes the entire time and everyone was wearing clothes and maybe there was, like, a full body condom. That's my theory.
It's a condom that would be bigger on the inside as well. You know, I see that's interesting, your take on David Tennant. I just think Tennant probably, his doctor just had sex with everybody because I feel like he's the post-PTSD doctor and he is like enjoying life and everyone's hitting on him and he's a little bit like, well, I am the doctor and I look fantastic. Why would I not let them have a great opportunity to whip it out?
No, I think he was flirty, but I very much got the impression he was too serious. I reckon of all the doctors, he arguably probably had the least sex.
Wow, this is going to be controversial.
This is controversial.
I cannot wait to hear what people say to this because I feel like there is going to be every type of reaction.
I want all of them. Tweet at me, guys. I want to hear your opinion on this.
Okay, so Matt Smith, since you are a hater, what do you think of, like, what do you think Matt Smith's doing?
Okay, I reckon Matt Smith probably had the most sex of all of them.
Matt Smith?
Yep.
We have very different takes on Doctor Who. This is fascinating. All right.
He literally said it, like, three different times. He, like, was the only one who explicitly mentioned it.
That he kept having sex?
Yes. He talked about, well, like, I guess more relationships, but, like, his story, and he kept on kind of, like, talking and making comments about, like, Elizabeth I and that.
Well, but that was Tennant, wasn't it, in the Day of the Doctor? Yeah, it was when he made out with her and he was also making out with the Zygon.
There was definitely, in the Day of the Doctor, Tennant was the one who, like, got married to her or whatever. But Matt, there was heaps of one-liners with Matt Smith where he, like, commented about it.
Matt Smith's Doctor just ended up in situations where he was trying to get out of them, like when Marilyn Monroe was trying to marry him.
Yeah, definitely. But, no, I'm positive this. I reckon he was flirtier. I reckon he kind of played the, like, cute guy trope. I reckon he was, yeah.
Oh, right. So hang on, there's an actual name for that. What's the cute guy trope? There's, because you're being negative, aren't you?
No, not really. Well, I can't, kind of.
Yeah, because you hate him.
I don't hate him. I just think he's my least favourite. I still like him. I just didn't trust him as the Doctor. I don't hate him, Justin. I don't want Matt Smith listening to this and thinking I hate him.
That feels like that's what you're saying. So, okay, all right. What about Capaldi then? Where does Capaldi sit?
Okay, I reckon Capaldi 100% somehow, like, I love him. I reckon it was the ghost episode.
Oh, really?
100%. Because there was a lot of suspicious storyline there as to how he ended up a ghost, right? Because you know how he was a ghost and there was the time loop sort of, and he was sort of back in time but forward in time. Everything happened. Well, that had to have occurred through touching, right? Or through banging, Justin.
Right. No, I got it. It's okay. Like, I might be 48, but I'm across your euphemism there of touching.
Thank you. I was worried I was too subtle.
No, I was across it. Right, that's interesting. See, I always thought maybe Capaldi and... Because didn't they have that really romantic long year or something with the River Song? I can't quite remember that Christmas episode. That was... They went to that place that lasted for... Like, it was like 20... It was a day on the planet, but that day stretched out for a long time. It's been a while since I've seen it. So I felt like he was possibly a little bit more romantic. Do you think there was ever anything with Missy?
No.
No?
No.
Do you think Missy went back in time to different timelines and tried to have sex with the Doctor at any point? Or are they just mates?
I think they're just mates because I think that they've been mates since they were, like, children, right? Like, they were always mates. And I think I never saw that as, like, I saw that as flirtatious, but I saw that as more platonic, long-term friends. I never thought anything happened between him and Missy.
A little bit like Donna.
No, I would not cave. Donna, there was some tension there.
Okay, all right.
I hope you regret this because for the next, like, week and a half, I'm just going to randomly send you tiny snippets of scenes off YouTube. Or
no, that's great.
Or even I'll be like, look at the tension.
I am completely fine with that. All right, well, that's great. Like, but this is genuinely what I love about Doctor Who fandom, which is there's so many different takes and so many different ways into it, and people can have completely different impressions, etc. So, you know, people should go to the Facebook page and write to us and let us know. Who do you think the Doctor's had sex with? I'll put it up on the Facebook page.
Oh, please, definitely. I really want to know thoughts because I eventually, like, I have a dream of turning this into a podcast and calling it The Doctor Who Did Me. And just doing a different alien every episode, though, like, but making it, like, really investigative, like almost like true crime. And we have to go back to the circumstances of the entire episode and working out whether the Doctor did that alien.
And anyone who is writing in, if they want to go old school Doctor as well, if they want to, you know, make a suggestion on Peter Davison or Tom Baker or go all the way back to William Hartnell, which would be strange, but, you know, let us know because we are curious and we quite clearly have way too much time on our hands to be wondering who this fictional character is having sex with.
Oh, 100%, because I have very strong thoughts about most of them as well. So let's bring it in. And I will argue it because I get a bit aggressive about it. So definitely bring it in.
More aggressive, the better. All right. Thank you very much. And let's chat again soon.
Thank you to Rove and Rachel for joining me for our latest episode. Remember, if you'd like to share your thoughts on WandaVision, which aliens the Doctor has had sex with, or anything else you'd like to share with us, come over to our Facebook page and sign up for our private section where you can discuss anything without fear of spoilers. We have a normal Facebook page. I use that to update when podcasts are ready, etc. But the private page is where we really dig into things. You can also find me on Twitter at JustinHamilton_ and on Instagram at JustinHamiltonComedian. There's also a new blog up at my site at justinhamilton.com.au where you can also find some short stories, some older blogs, all sorts of things. Can I say my name enough in one sentence? There's another podcast coming out this week for episode 2 of The Leftovers. Thank you for all the kind responses about that first episode. And hello to everyone who is watching it for the first, second, or umpteenth time. Next week, Ben Elwood returns to continue our Sofia Coppola series with Lost in Translation. So if you'd like to watch that before the podcast comes out, you have a week to squeeze that in. I'm also working on some new segments for this show as well. My old pal, Garth Jones, he's the author of Homebrew Vampire Bullets. He's a mate of mine who's worked with me behind the scenes. For people who used to go to the shelf, he designed and set up all of our posters. He's worked on my posters. He did the poster for Johnny and Mary Forever, 1994. He's going to be sharing an osploitation segment for Big Squid. And we're going to start that off in a fun place before digging into the weirder aspects of that genre. I'm across osploitation, but I don't know it. And this is his wheelhouse, and I'm really looking forward to that. So we'll have that coming up soon. If you're enjoying this podcast, please give us a top review on your favorite platforms. And this year, we're all about growing the listenership. So if you have some like-minded pals that you think would enjoy the work my friends and I put into this, please recommend us. Word of mouth is still the best way to grow a product correctly. So your patronage is welcome. It just makes a difference. Like, I know I listen to things that are suggested by friends more than when I'm just reading text on a screen. So feel free to tell people about us. Also, feel free not to. Like, you can just keep it to us. That's fine as well. I know you would only suggest this to the right people. I trust you. That's what I'm saying. I just trust you. This week, we're leaving off on a quote by Russian filmmaker Andrei Tarkovsky, who said, "What is art? It's like a declaration of love, the consciousness of our dependence on each other, a confession, an unconscious act that, nonetheless, reflects the true meaning of life, love and sacrifice." Until then.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.